Hola, listeners. Me llamo S. Juan, and this is... I don't know enough Spanish to do this. This is Miskatonic Musings. I am Sean.
I'm Charles. Did you take Spanish in high school?
I did. I'm terrible with other languages, though.
That's okay. I also took Spanish in high school, and also am very bad at it, so...
I remember Puedo ir al baño, because you had to ask that before you used the bathroom.
That's a good one to know. Mis pantalones son fuego, I remember. I think that vaguely, roughly translates to my pants are on fire.
I remember me amo, which means my name is.
Yeah.
Or actually, it means my name, and then you do es. Es is easy, because that's is. It sounds the same.
I remember that just from the Spanish version of the Eminem song.
Me amo es. Huh? Me amo es.
Yeah.
Now I want to look that up.
It's not a thing. It's not a thing. Don't worry.
Is it not a thing?
I mean, it may be a thing.
Can someone make it a thing?
I did not say that knowing that it was a thing. It may be, but I have no knowledge of the subject.
If I find it, please put it in the show notes.
Okay. So welcome to Miskatonic Musings.
Yes.
This week, since Necronomicon Providence is right around the corner, we're covering the 1970 adaptation of the Dunwich Horror. Which, for the record, you may not share this opinion. I fucking love this movie.
We're gonna do it.
Okay. That's fair. Maybe it's like the Black Coat's Daughter and you just didn't get it.
No, I got it.
Yeah?
Oh, I got it.
Okay.
There was a lot of thumb stuff.
Right?
I mean, but that was pretty great.
That's the only thing that's missing from Lovecraft's prose.
There's not enough hand stuff.
Enough hand stuff.
There's no passages describing, and he made his hand look like a gun, and then he did it with the other hand, and then he did it again.
More finger guns.
And then he kind of swirled a knife around in four spots.
They should have finger guns in this movie. That would have been good.
He like kind of did. He had like...
That would be a very fat stock. I don't know my gun terminology. That'd be a very fat gun if what he was doing with his hands, the thing where...
Oh, you mean the barrel?
No, the barrel would be his thumb in this instance.
Oh, no, the barrel is what the bullet fires out of.
Yeah, you're talking about the thing he does where he makes the fist and sticks his thumb out and puts it against his head, right?
No. Talking about there's a part where he's kind of doing this, like, whatever, we'll get to it.
We'll get to it. Okay. That makes more sense, because the thumb out thing, that would be a fucked up looking gun.
No, that would be like a cannon.
Be a fucked up looking cannon, too. Unless the thumb is like the wick.
It could be.
All right. Unimportant. Before we get into it, though, we got listener questions. What the fuck? We got two tonight. Two listener questions.
Wow.
Yeah.
Damn. Back on the grind.
People heard are yelling at Tim a few episodes ago, and they really stepped up.
Before you begin, are these both Tim?
No. I got like five from Tim, but since he left us high and dry for so long, they get to wait.
Okay, all right.
First one comes from Twitter from Jim Pyre at Jim Pyre. I feel bad you didn't get a question last show, so here goes. Which great old one would you be, and why? Smiley face.
That's a tough one.
That is mostly because what the fucking mythology and deity ships in Lovecraft's mythos, at least sticking strictly with his shit, is so fucking ill-defined.
Yeah.
Like, Derleth came in and did a whole bunch of shit, made a bunch of gods, put them in different orders and whatevs. I'm not super well-versed on him, so I can't say too much about that. I think in Lovecraft's actual written shit, the only deity that is strictly defined as a great old one is Cthulhu, but I could be wrong on that.
I think you're right, but I'm not. I'm certainly not a scholar.
But just going in his general mythos, like overall, all of the deities and big bad beasties that are described in his works and other ones, I guess, because, again, he, believe it or not, there is kind of a limited number that he mentions.
Yeah.
I have to go with Azathoth, just because the idea of a blind idiot god That speaks to me, man.
I don't know. I'm kind of on the fence between Yogg-Sothoth and Nyarlathotep.
Well, what appeals to you about each of those?
Yogg is like, he's just kind of...
got gates. He's got keys.
He can open... He's your doorman. He can open the door. But I feel like he's like a social butterfly, you know? He gets to talk with all of them. It's like, how's it going, Yogg? And he's like, well, I don't know. How does he communicate? But... he does.
He's also the only one in the Lovecraft mythos that explicitly has sex.
That's another big one. I mean, I feel like Nyarlathotep probably could, because doesn't he, like, take the form of a man?
Yeah, but...
but, yeah, I don't know.
If we're going strictly textual, Nyarlathotep isn't sexual.
I'm going to go
with Yogg. Gotta remember that rhyme.
I'm going to go with Yogg-Sothoth. And I'll get to, like... you know, have like a goat child.
Yeah. Get to have a little Dean Stockwell baby.
Yeah. Chilling with Radnacks. That'll be fun.
Well, thank you, Jim, for that. Our next question comes from the mailbag from Alex Cotton. Subject line, apocalypse when?
All right.
Dear Miskatonic Musings, do you prefer your apocalyptic fiction to be set during or after the apocalypse? As an example to clarify, would you prefer a Night of the Living Dead in which zombies have just appeared and people are dealing with that, or a Day of the Dead in which everyone knows the score and are trying to survive? Three Men Podcast, One Man Leave, Alex Cotton. You know, gut reaction to that, I guess part of it would be reading or experiencing. Like, which would you rather experience and which would you rather read?
I mean, I wouldn't want to experience either, but...
sure.
But if we're going to it, I guess I would want to experience after the fact, because presumably that means I lived, so I have enough resources to live for a little bit.
See, I agree with that, but for almost opposite reasons. Like, I would rather experience post-apocalypse because, you know, you don't have the illusion of hope.
Yeah.
Which sounds grim. But then again, also, I guess if you're experiencing post-apocalypse, you lived through apocalypse in
you're just a lot of the situations. You're just glad to be alive, I think.
Unless you're a little apocalypse baby.
It's true. In terms of reading, though. Oh, yeah. Like, in terms of, like, entertainment, I think I'm more into, like, the lead-up because it's more exciting. Kind of like, I don't know, after the fact, it's always very depressing. I just think of like Cormac McCarthy's The Road or like Stakeland, or it's just kind of like a slog. It's like, look, we found this can of beans. Hooray. But like beforehand, it's like, oh, shit, like let's have signs and march and, you know, all of this crazy shit.
I guess to answer the question, I'm always drawn to the post-apocalyptic stuff, despite the fact that it's always depressing and terrible for the survivors, because there's so much room for interesting world building. You know, you'll see something like Waterworld, for example, which, despite being kind of a shit film, had some very cool ideas behind it. I will say I do like Day of the Dead best out of Romero's original trilogy, and that may be part of why. Not entirely sure. Land of the Dead is the really post-apocalyptic one where Dennis Hopper has a weird fucking city and they're using fireworks to distract him, and I really need to rewatch that movie.
I don't know how I feel about Land. There's a lot of the newer ones that I saw once and have never revisited.
Diary and Survival I did not like.
Diary was my first date, actually, with Emily.
Oh, I think you've mentioned this before on the podcast, actually.
We knew we would work because we both left and we had that kind of like that awkward, like, we didn't say anything because we're like, oh no.
Like, left during the movie? Or you...
No. I mean, like, when we were done, when we were walking, you know, you have that, like, when you're with a friend, you're like immediately like, that sucked. Or you're like, that was awesome. But this was a first date. So we were kind of like, eh? And then we're both like, yeah, it sucked. And we're like, oh, good. You have similar taste.
Yeah. I don't know. I have to rewatch all three of the last ones, Land, Diary, and Survival. I've only seen each of them once. I really liked Land when I saw it in theaters, but
I feel like that was
12 years ago. So
yeah, on the rewatch, I'd probably enjoy Land the best out of them. I remember Survival just being like, why are we doing Hatfields and McCoy? Why?
Oh, God. Yeah. Pumpkinhead Ford at the end or in the story.
In that it was on the Sci-Fi Channel.
Was it?
No, I lied. I mean, I'm sure it has been.
Because I don't know if the, like, I guess one of them must have had a theatrical release since you two went on a date to see it.
Oh, yeah. Diary did have a theatrical, but it was, like, limited theatrical, I think. We went and saw it at one of the, like, indie theaters.
Gotcha.
So, yeah.
Which one did you like better out of those two, Diary and Survival? I remember both of them being pretty disappointing.
I think Diary. Just at least they were he was trying something new.
Yeah, with like the handheld footage stuff.
Yeah, it was like kind of like the found footage stuff.
Yeah, I definitely appreciate that more. Rest in peace, George A. Romero.
Yeah, God, what a bummer.
Yeah. Well, on that sad note, thank you, Alex, for that good listener night, everybody. Question. Yeah, shit.
So yeah, let's talk about this film.
Yeah, it's one of them. If you like the AIP Roger Corman stuff, you'll like this maybe, because it's one of those. It was produced by Corman, put out by AIP. It is classic 70s fucking weird horror movies. They got weird with horror movies in the 70s.
Yeah, they got very colorful, at least in this one.
So this was directed by Daniel Haller, who actually has experience directing Lovecraft, because in 65, 5 years before this, he did Die Monster Die, which was a loose adaptation of The Color Out of Space.
Oh, I never knew that.
Yeah, it's I like it, but again, I'm a sucker
for it. That means
for
it's not good, so it's not
no,
good.
No, it's I'm not going to say it's good, but I like it. I'm a sucker for the AIP horror flicks, and it is very different from the story.
Fair enough.
And it has Boris Karloff, so
it's got that going for it. I guess before we go ahead, too, this one's sort of a loose adaptation. Like,
I think it's for a Lovecraft adaptation, it's closer than, you know, Reanimator from Beyond, for example, closer than a lot of the more modern adaptations. But it definitely strays in certain plot points.
The big one is like they have this he has this big, nice house. And I'm like, really? I don't think they had a cool mansion in the story.
The Whately house kind of sucked, and they kept, like, just building shit on it for Wilbur's brother.
Yeah, because in the story, I totally picture them being, like,
kind of bumpkins?
Yeah, like poor rednecks with, like, a shack.
Yeah. So, full spoilers on this. If you want to hear us talk about the actual short story, we'll have a link in the show notes to episode, I think it was episode 100 when we sat down and talked about Lovecraft's story on this.
Was it?
I think so.
I'm sure it's somewhere in there.
I think that's when we did one of the VHS movies and Dunwich.
This is Mallory's favorite one, right? I think she said that before.
I don't remember.
I have a terrible memory, so maybe I'm making that up.
Speaking of our former co-host Mallory, quick plug, check out the Reading Glasses podcast that she does with Brea Grant. They talk about books, and I haven't listened to it yet, but by all accounts, it's really fucking good. So, all
right.
We'll have a link to that in our show notes as well.
Word.
So, first thing first in the movie, the first thing that jumps out at you, the fucking soundtrack to this movie is the best.
That is an opinion you have. Whoa. No, it's pretty great.
Okay, good.
It's very over the top, but it's
pretty great. Oh yeah.
I mean, this whole fucking movie's fairly over the top.
It very much is. Les Baxter did the arrangement. He's more known as like a straight up like swing band musician.
All right.
But he did a lot of stuff for AIP, a lot of the Poe flicks, a lot of their beach party movies. So
there's a distinct beach party vibe to it. Yeah.
I don't think so. But,
I'm completely lying about that.
Okay. But right off the bat, you get hit with two things. A, fucking sweet soundtrack. B, Lavina Whately being fucked by an invisible god.
You know what? That's your movie, folks. If you're hesitant after this, then leave, because that's the movie.
Actually, Wikipedia says that she's giving childbirth during that first scene, but that does not match the sound she's making.
No, like childbirth is more like grunty, like, oh, like I'm in pain. This was not.
No, let's hear more of your childbirth noises, please.
Come on, baby.
There we are. That's childbirth. Put that in your record.
Feel free to
books.
Sample that and do something weird with it. I know you don't have time, thankfully.
Listeners, it's up to you.
Oh, no, that's right. We have listeners.
Yeah.
No.
It starts with either the throes of passion or the throes of childbirth for Lavina Waitley. And then cuts to an awesome opening credits scene.
It is really awesome. I'll give you that.
Like, it's sort of like a Shadowrama sort of thing. Like, it's like very like silhouette 2D animation of like the devil eating shit and people marching places.
It's pretty cool.
I don't know how else to really describe it. It really doesn't have anything to do with anything. But damn, do I enjoy watching it.
It's super cool. I think a Lovecraft purist would be super annoyed because you're like, why is the devil here? The devil has literally nothing to do with the story. But you know what? It's a horror movie from the 70s, so it had to have the devil in it.
Yeah, get that stick out of your ass. This is awesome. Who cares? Lovecraft guy. It is pretty great
when you realize it's like the devil eating someone. Like
yeah. Yeah. Which is, to be fair, how I would imagine the devil eating somebody if he were to attain that size. I don't normally imagine the devil as a giant, but
yeah, I don't usually picture him as a giant either.
Because it is like the traditional, like, I'm the devil. I'm a guy with horns and I got like goat legs, but he's also like big enough to eat a man like a grape. So, you know, it's an artistic choice.
It's cool. It's a cool credit sequence.
So yeah, once that go ahead.
Yeah. And then once, you can go, because I honestly am trying to think what it hops into. Like, what at the library, right?
Yeah, what it hops into is out in front of the library at Miskatonic University.
Plug, because that's the name of our show.
Hey, is that a plug?
It's a plug. We're plugging ourselves
and B,
during our
should
show.
Should we be plugging ourselves during our show?
I believe the answer to that is fuck yes.
All right, we'll have a link in the show notes.
Miskatonic Musings, you heard it here first.
That's an exclusive. Yeah, Dr. Armitage from the short story is just hanging out, like, talking to people, carrying the fucking Necronomicon.
Yeah, he's pretty lackadaisical with it, considering how expensive they establish it to be.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He's just kind of holding it, yeah.
That's not a book you just fucking, like, shove under your arm and walk around a campus with.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I would be afraid, like, in a Lovecraft story, that if someone was doing that, they were about to get robbed or something. But, like, he's just cool as you please. Just like, yeah, it's just like my little book here.
Like, I mean, if you remember, in the movie Necronomicon, Lovecraft had to break into, like, a fucking library prison to get his hands on that thing.
Yeah, in this iteration, it's just kind of kept in, like, a glass box.
Yeah. And so Armitage hands it off to his student, Nancy, played by the great Sandra Dee. He's like, hey, put this back in the library for me. I'm a professor. I don't bother with menial tasks.
Yeah, you kind of got the sense he was like, wait, am I still holding this? Oh, put this back.
So she does, and she's creeped up on by Dean Stockwell playing Wilbur Waitley.
Playing a creepo. A creepo.
He is like a creepy mustache sex man.
Yeah, he just screams sex offender. Like, I don't know why anybody would trust him.
Well, keep the context of 1970.
That's true. Everyone looked like that.
Yeah. He is established in this movie as like, this is like the ideal man.
Which is funny. Because I look at him in this movie and I'm looks like that old picture of my dad.
Yeah, like white dude afro, perv mustache, brown, like, tweed suit, and everyone just wants to fuck Wilbur Waitley. So, yeah, he creeps up and is like, hey, can I look at that book? And she agrees to it because he's got such great eyes.
Sure.
That's a quote. He's got great eyes. And
that's enough, I guess.
Yeah. And, like, seriously, like, as opposed to the story where Wilbur Waitley is established as being, like, 7 feet tall, which is a thing you cannot teach, having, like, fucking goat legs and a weird face and dogs like hating him and him walking. Yeah, I mean, he has goat legs, so yeah, he's gonna walk all weird.
It's got kind of like a weird, yeah, stumble.
This version of Wilbur, his only deformities, like aside from a mustache, we find out later, he's just covered in tattoos, like crappy, like hieroglyphic tattoos.
Yeah.
Aside,
so that, I think, yeah, that's probably one of the biggest departures. It's like he's not a 7 foot tall goat man.
And also, like, he doesn't die halfway through. So,
well, yeah, there's that too. And the thumb stuff, but we'll get to it.
Love the thumb stuff. I was thinking, like, that sounds weird, doesn't it? I love thumb stuff.
I know, it sounds terrible out of context. And kind of in context, too.
I don't even know what thumb stuff would be in a sexual context. Is that like a...
I'm just picturing in the butt. I mean...
Well, yeah, but it just makes me think of that fucking nursery rhyme.
The pie?
Yeah, I don't remember the fucking rhyme itself, but the kid who sticks his thumb in a pie and pulls out a plum and says, oh, what a good boy am I. Like, that's the sexual fetish. Like, stick my thumb up your butt, pull out a turd. Oh, what a good boy am I.
Yeah. By the way, if you're seeing me at Necronomicon and you've just listened to this, bring this up. I'll be very awkwarded out. It'll be funny.
It'll be great. Just first thing you say when you see Sean.
Don't even say hello. Just say
just shove the thumb in.
Oh, don't shove a thumb in. That's assault.
That's assault. We do not condone that on this podcast. But
nope.
Yeah, Dr. Armitage shows back up because I guess after sending your student to do something, you just decide you don't trust her and want to follow up. So Wilbur gets to look the Necronomicon for like 5 seconds before Armitage is like, oh, you're a Whateley. You can't look at that book. That book's expensive and your dad's something.
Yeah, I mean, don't read that book. I was just kind of lazily holding under my arm.
And presumably doing a lecture on.
Yeah, wait, he brought it to his lecture, too.
Yeah, if you want to learn about the Necronomicon, you got to pay tuition, kid.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing to think about, because, like, in the Lovecraft mythos, everybody just goes nuts when they read it. So, like, having a lecture class on it, wouldn't everyone in it go nuts?
You would think.
But, you know, playing a little fast and loose with it, like, you don't really go crazy, I guess, when you read, because, I mean, the professor has read it.
Yeah, but he's fucking Ed Begley Senior. So, I mean, he's a man of stronger stock.
Yes.
You hear that, kids who forget that Ed Begley Jr. had a dad who was also an actor? That's him.
Something wild. They probably don't even know who Ed Begley Jr. is.
What? The kids all love Arrested Development. Of course they know Ed Begley Jr.
They might. Anyway.
So, yeah, despite being like, oh, you can't look at this book, he's like, you want to get some dinner?
Yeah, it's an interesting segue from like, how dare you? And then cut to, we're all eating dinner. I'm like, wait, what? Okay.
Yeah, so they go have a dinner and talk about like, oh yeah, I wrote the paper on your great grandpa who fucking got hung for heresy in Dunwich. Is this an awkward conversation?
Are you enjoying your food, by the way?
Yeah.
It's a weird, do you really take like people that have been ostracized by the town that you've written papers about? Do you really take them out to dinner?
To be fair, his family, it wasn't him ostracized. It was his family. And it was a different town.
Okay, fair enough.
And it was 70 years ago. So it's cool. It's cool.
It is cool. There's a little bit of hypnotism action going on.
Yeah, he has like semi-hypnotic powers instead of like weird tentacle butt.
I mean, I guess it's a little more direct, like, in getting somebody there.
Well, it's also this movie, like,
you can just grab them, yeah.
And also, like, this movie has, like, more characters for him to interact with, so...
Yeah, this is true. Like, in the story, he just kind of, like, hangs out in the house and then eventually leaves and kills dogs or something.
Yeah. Here he has to be, you know, Dean Stockwell, a fucking charmer.
He's charming the pants off of Sandra D, quite literally.
Yeah, like Professor Armitage and Elizabeth, who has so far gone unmentioned in this recap because she's really not there for much.
Oh my god, I forgot she was there, yeah.
Yeah, she's there to hang out with Armitage and be like, hey, where's Nancy?
Yeah, she's like, yes. It's just like one or two lines.
Yeah, she looks at an owl. That's it. That's the extent of her story, really.
I think that dog later actually has more screen time.
Seems like it.
That was a real good dog actor, though.
That's a callback.
Callback.
So
to whatever episode I mentioned dog actors in.
Yeah. So yeah, basically Armitage and Elizabeth leave, and Whateley's like, oh, I missed the last bus back to Dunwich. You want to give me a ride? Evil, creepy eye. And she's like, yeah, let's do that. Despite it being fucking like 10:30 at night, a 40-minute drive to and from Dunwich with a dude I just met who has a fucking perv mustache. But it's the 70s.
Yeah, it's established. Everyone had a perfect mustache in the 70s.
Yeah.
Except for the women.
Presumably. I don't even know what that's supposed to imply.
I don't know.
Like, do they have a secret mustache? What does that even mean? Liberal
with the grooming, I guess, in the 70s.
Oh, it's a pube joke?
I mean, just body hair in general.
All right. Anyway.
It wasn't focused. It's okay. Let's move on.
Trip back down to Dunwich, as per the Darkest of the Hillside Thickets song, which actually starts with a line of dialogue from this movie. So,
hey-o.
Good band. Good band. Yeah, they go down a gas station. Gets mad that Wilbur is in a car and refuses to fill up their tank.
Gives him exactly $1 worth of gas. And only washes half of the windshield.
To be fair, I don't know how much gas cost in 1970, so that could be like three quarters of a tank.
That might have been like, yeah, half a tank.
That was enough to get him down to Dunwich. So
it was.
They get down there and Wilbur's a fucking creep.
He is a creep, but he's got a really cool house.
Oh, the house is amazing. Like, as mentioned, it's like a little, like, old-timey gothic mansion.
Like, it's awesome. Whoever they got to decorate was really cool. Maybe part of his birth was, like, just being able to be good at interior decorating.
Maybe.
Because, like, he nails it with all the color schemes and stuff. Yep.
If I had to guess, they probably just reused one of the houses from one of the Poe movies.
I mean, yes, it's clearly just one of the Poe houses, and they threw some purple curtains up. But, you know, it's cool looking.
It's great looking. So he's like, hey, you drop me off. You want to come in for a drink? It's late. And, you know, she does. Like, you want some tea? Sure. Roofies the tea and rips the fucking part of her engine out.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess the 70s were a different time, but thank God. I think any woman right now in their right mind would... Even if they happened to drive somebody that far away so late, I don't think they'd be drinking tea. They'd be like, do you have anything with, like, a cap on it?
Hopefully. I mean,
well, especially nowadays, if you saw him looking like that with the weird mustache, you probably wouldn't go with him.
Probably not, but...
Unless you were going to rob him. Switch the game around. That's a Tales from the Crypt. I'm sure that was a Tales from the Crypt.
I would bet money on that, yeah. But regardless... He's like, oh, I don't have a phone. We can't call a fucking auto yard. You should spend the night here. And luckily, he just puts her to bed. He doesn't do anything weird tonight.
Yeah, I mean, he's pretty polite considering he already drugged her.
Yeah, considering that he's obviously the fucking worst.
He's pretty terrible.
Oh, and his grandpa shows up to yell at him.
Yeah, his grandfather's like, what the fuck? And he's like, shut up, Grandpa, I'll do what I want.
Very rebellious for... I know he's supposed to be 25, but Dean Stockwell looked about 40.
He's not 25 in this. I love when, like, Ed Begley Jr.'s seniors...
Ed Begley Jr.'s dad.
Yeah, when he's like, that boy, and I'm like, boy, that is like a 30-something. But I guess compared to... Ed Begley Sr., it is a boy.
Yeah, he was 34 when this filmed, playing 25. But, you know, it's Dean Stockwell, so...
And he's like Yogg-Sothoth offspring, so you don't know how the aging process works.
Yeah, it's much slower in this one than the short story. Because over the course of like 10 years, he goes from like baby to 40.
That's right, he ages in like Sothoth years.
Is that the term?
No, it is not. I just made that up. But it kind of seems like dog ears.
All right.
Well, it's like, you know, whatever. But yeah, there's like, oh, she has a weird dream sequence.
Oh, yeah. The fucking space hippies.
Or whatever. First, I was like, are they in Africa? And then I was like, I hope they're not, because these are clearly just white people.
In face paint. Yeah. No, the old ones. In this version of Lovecraft are like Technicolor space hippies, and it's amazing.
Yeah, it's very like Dawning of the Age of Aquarius kind of shit.
I loved it.
Yeah, there's a lot of like she's running and they're kind of like tribally chasing her and laughing in her face and stuff.
And then they all stop to bang each other at one point.
I think that's what they're doing.
And then she runs away some more. It's if this is the culture that Wilbur Whately is so desperately trying to bring back, like these are so superior to humanity. Like, maybe stop and watch them for a minute, because I'm pretty sure they're just fucking and yelling all the time. Yeah, I mean,
bro, you could just go to
go to Burning Man.
Yeah, just go to Burning Man. Well, at that point, I don't think there was a Burning Man. I think life was just Burning Man back then. Invent
Burning Man.
Yeah. Burning Man was like the local, the closest parking lot you could find in the 70s.
Well, this was 1970, so it wasn't. The 60s was like the beginning of the 60s
was pretty wild, too. Yeah.
I don't know enough about my American history.
There is a cool match cut I liked where she's like, oh, she's running away. And then she opens the door in the Whateley house and she's like, wait, what? I liked it. I thought it worked.
I thought there was a great match not cut where he's trying to make tea and he tries to light a match for the stove, but it doesn't light. So instead of like cutting the scene, Dean Stockwell's a pro, so he just threw the match away and lit a different match.
Started again. Realism.
Yeah.
You don't always get it.
You don't always get the match on the first try.
And you could blame that on the director, or you could say it's for realism's sake.
I wouldn't blame it on anybody. I mean, it's not a mistake. It's just like they didn't cut. They could have had a match cut where they just cut that part out and then just skip to him lighting the second match, but
they could have. So anyway, let's see.
Next day, they go on like a picnic.
Yeah, there's like a lot of, I don't know, it's weird. It's kind of like they're dating.
Yeah.
I know it's like he's just, the end game is he's just trying to get her impregnated by Yogg-Sothoth. But he does seem like he's kind of wooing her a bit.
Sort of, I guess. And I don't know, like the roofing that he does, like it's just like at random times. He's like, here, drink this tea. Let's go on a fucking walk. Like
the first night it made sense because it was like, I want her to stay in the house. But then, the second, it's like
we have a big day. We should go into town. Let me roofie you first so you can take a nap. So I don't know if like what he's putting in her drink also has like a magic love potion component to it, or that's just his weird hypnotism.
I don't know. I thought it was like a zombie drug where you would be like susceptible.
Yeah, to, maybe
stuff.
So that. I think I'm going to go with that just because otherwise it does not make any sense for him to be drugging her all the time.
Just like all the time. Yeah, because she's like wants to be there at that point.
Sort of. I mean, again, how much of that is his weird hypnotism?
But she liked him even before he started drugging her. So,
but he like on their first time, he gave her like the creepy eye, like in the library, and she was like, "Oh, that his might have eyes."
Been hypnotism, yeah,
yeah. So,
well, anyway, they have lunch, and then they
the Dr. Armitage and Elizabeth show up. They're like, "She didn't come home last night. That's weird." So they show up at the Whateley place, and
Grandpa's like, "Get away! Get off my lawn!"
Grandpa's cranky. There's an owl that hangs out on their porch.
For reasons.
And basically they're told like, yeah, we're cool here. You can leave. Which they don't buy because clearly why would anyone want to stay with the Whateleys aside from like, they have a really cool house. But like Grandpa's crazy and Wilbur is kind of weird and gross.
Yeah. It's an accurate summation.
But also sexy in that Dean Stockwell way. Can't take that away. He's got those boyish good looks.
Yes, that boy. That's clearly 30-something man.
He was a child actor. He was known for his boyish looks.
What was he in?
Stars in My Crown, Anchors Away, Song of the Thin Man.
I mean, I don't know any of older movies, so. But yeah, I didn't know he was a child actor.
Yep. And then this, and then Quantum Leap. So, and then Battlestar. With things in between.
Yeah.
So yeah, they go and Armitage and Elizabeth decide to investigate because something's clearly off here. So they head to the newspaper place, I guess, and like look for the records. Like, oh, like, I don't know why that's the first thing you do. Like, I want to find out about what's going on here. Let me see when this boy was born. Like, the move.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't,
they didn't have Google, so.
I'd probably go to the cops first and be like, hey.
Does he have a criminal record?
What's up with this dude?
Yeah.
But suspension of disbelief, I guess.
So they get that the father's unknown, which Armitage, knowing what he does from reading the Necronomicon, is like, that's suspicious. I'm going to go to the doctor who gave birth to him and question him. So they hang out and meet Dr. Corey and Nurse Cora. confusing naming, make their names a little different. But
unless it's the same person.
It wasn't, unfortunately. It was
not. That's not what they were going for.
Talia Shire was Nurse Cora, though, so... all you Rocky fans.
There it is.
And they made an interesting choice that Ridley Scott would mirror 40-some years later. The Doctor, they had him in a flashback sequence where he was young. So for most of the movie where it's not set in the flashback, he's an old man makeup.
Oh, yeah.
Weird choice.
Kind of a weird choice, yeah.
Like, he was in, like, 30 seconds, maybe a minute of footage as young Doctor. They could have just had a different guy. They had his voiceover narration over it. Just
hired a guy.
Yeah, I mean, he's saying like, hey, that's me. So why just have him in old man makeup? Weird choice, but whatever. So through flashback, we learn like, oh, I didn't really give birth to him. I went there. Kid was already born. He had a brother. Brother died, stillborn, didn't see the body. His mom was dying, so I saved her. And here she is in the loony bin.
And she's not doing great.
No, ranting, raving. Wearing a wig. I mean, the character isn't, the actress is.
Typical mental patient stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, is this better or worse portrayal than Lavina in the story where she just kind of dies uneventfully partway through?
I honestly don't know. I mean, this is a little offensive, I think, to mentally ill people.
Yeah.
Because it's that, like, I'm clawing through the bars thing where it's
yeah.
Like, I don't know that schizophrenic people do that.
Yeah, I would say this is worse. And plus, in the short story, she at least got to be part of her kid's life and helped raise the kid.
Yeah, this one is like, she births the kid, and then it's like immediately to the loony bin, so.
Yeah.
Not a fun life.
So, boo on that, I guess. Wilbur ends up taking Nancy up to the Devil's Hop Yard, which is a ancient pagan altar. And ritual funhouse.
Yeah, that's a departure, because in the story, it's a hill.
Yeah, but I thought there was some shit up on that hill.
There might have been some shit on the hills, yeah.
Not as elaborate as this.
This is, like, super elaborate. Like, at least in the story, you might, like, be like, oh, you know, I've heard Dunwich is bad, and there's, like, some weird thing on the hill, but, you know, whatever. This is like, yeah, there's a big-ass altar, and it's on a cliff. You know, the one that faces the ocean?
Yeah.
It's called, like, the Devil's Hop Yard? Yeah, not a great town.
No. Who would like that? Who would like to live? Well, actually,
You know what,
That'd be pretty cool. If I lived there, I'd be like, yeah, let's hang out at the Devil's Hop Yard. That sounds awesome.
As soon as you said that, I was like, fuck, I want to move there now.
Right? I mean, you're closer than I am. Who would live there?
I'm like, except for us.
Yeah.
Except for me and my family.
So, having, like... roofied her for like the fifth time in this movie.
There's a lot, yeah.
He explains his evil plot and maybe rapes her. It's unclear if it's him or if it's Yog-Sothoth, but
I'm not sure. I think
either way, gross.
I think it's supposed to be Yog, but it's hard to say. It's shot in such a way where you're like, I'm not really sure what's happening.
Because it's like cutting back and forth with the space hippies.
Yeah.
So.
Is this when they start hitting you with the colors? I mean, I know they hit you with the colors before.
Maybe. I don't remember. There's lots of flashes of colors to indicate like, oh, Yog-Sothothery is happening.
I mean, it was an interesting device for people who clearly couldn't afford great special effects.
I mean, it was a low-budget movie, but I don't think the effects are bad in this.
Well, to be fair, you don't really get to see the Yog thing that not, like, in a different color. You know, like, it's hit with, like, blue, green, red.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
Okay.
But, after this, they, like, walk back to the Whateley residence arm-in-arm.
Yeah.
And, like, get in an argument with old Wizard Whateley, and he falls down some steps and dies.
Yeah, that was a weird choice, but it happens.
So I guess the purpose of this next part is to draw in the angry crowd. Basically,
your angry mob. Yeah.
Yeah. They try and bury him with their creepy Yog-Sothoth rituals, and the good Christian folk of Dunwich are having no part of it. So we get introduced to our angry mob to be drawn in later.
Get your space bullshit away from my god. Yeah, it's basically that. And then, I don't know if you're supposed to feel bad for him then. Like, he's being religiously persecuted.
That's
but
true.
But he also, He also wants to, like, sacrifice a lady, so...
Yeah. No one's sympathetic in this story.
Yeah, everyone's kind of vaguely awful.
Even Armitage, who, like, is the hero, is just kind of a cranky old man who doesn't want kids looking at his book.
Yeah, he's, like, the lesser of the evils. He's, like, the good guy by default.
The only reason he doesn't like Wilbur is, like, A, he tried to look at his book, and B... he did a research project on his great grandpa, who was not a cool guy. So he's inherently like, oh, you must be like him. Like, that's, come on, bad reasoning.
I mean, in this case, it's
accurate, valid. But
yeah,
that's I'm not going to give him points for stumbling into, you know, righteous fury.
Fair.
So it's about this point after grandpa gets deaded that Wilbur's twin finally
breaks out of the room.
Yeah. Oh, this is actually a little bit before. Elizabeth, Nancy's friend, shows up on her own to the Whateley house and barges upstairs into the room of Wilbur's twin and just dies.
Dies. Yeah, that's, yep. So long. We barely knew ye.
Yeah, it weirdly, like, the monster ate her clothes first, I think. Like, she was naked at some point.
Yeah, it's a weird choice, but...
And also, okay. We do get to see the monster, like, briefly. And, okay, it is... I think this is kind of a bad effect. I think it's just like a mop.
It's kind of very mop-like. I thought of the Muppets.
Yeah.
It's very Muppet-like.
It's like you make a Muppet out of a dirty mop. That is Wilbur's
To be fair, I'm sure a lot of those Muppets were made from dirty mops.
Maybe
clean mops. Clean mops
for the
Muppets.
Clean mops. But, give Jim Henson some credit.
Dirty mops for AIP pictures. They had to. They just used the mop, and then when they were done, they made it into Yggdrasil. And then when they were done using it, they would use it as a mop again.
Hey, it's effective.
You're saving money. It's cost effective.
That's the Roger Corman way. Save some fucking cash.
Hell yeah.
So our movie's starting to wrap up. Wilbur's taken Nancy up to the Devil's Hop Yard to complete the ritual, which basically involves dressing her up in like a black towel, pretty much. Like, there's no sides to it.
No.
Putting a book on her and then just like chanting some shit while putting his thumbs out with his fist next to his forehead.
Hand jivey kind of stuff.
Yeah, I love the goofy ritual shit in this movie. With the hand thing and the knife flippies.
It's great. It kind of just made me think he was super OCD, but it's great. It's just like, I have to do this four times, and then I have to move my hands like this. Like, we don't know that that wasn't just him being weird. That might not even be required.
Yeah, we don't know the intricacies of
Yggdrasil.
But
you know what? You do you, Wilbur.
Yeah.
No one can tell you how to do that ritual.
So... Armitage is at this point assembling his crew, which consists of the doctor and an angry mob.
Yeah.
They forego the, like, duster spray from the book that they use to, like, see the monster in favor of just kind of going up there with guns.
Yeah, they're like, let's just shoot it. And, okay. That's what an angry mob does, so.
Yeah, and they try shooting the invisible monster. It eats some of them. Armitage makes it up there as Wilbur is finishing the ritual, and they have, like, a goofy wizard off.
Yeah, they're just shouting stuff.
Yeah, like, I love it at one point, like, Armitage shouts some shit, Wilbur shouts some shit, lightning strikes somewhere, and Wilbur gets this fucking smug look and goes back to what he's doing.
Like, yeah, he's like,
why do you think that's your fault? Don't take credit for nature.
I know, you're not Thor.
And... okay, I guess whatever Armitage is chanting is working.
Makes him catch on fire?
Well, before that, he's like looking super distraught and unable to remember his chants.
Yeah.
And eventually, yeah, he gets struck by lightning, set on fire, and falls off the cliff. And that's the end. Like, they're
the
like, okay, Nancy, you're
movie.
Safe. Oh, and also you're pregnant, but you're safe. Like,
I mean, you know, Devil's Hop Yard, that's where you go. It sounds like a trendy
microbrewer.
Bar.
Yeah.
Like a microbrewer. Yeah, it really does. The Devil's Hoppy. It sounds like some shit I would go to maybe on a Saturday night and be like, these drinks are too expensive.
Oh, and also, after Wilbur falls off, but before they rescue her, we get to see Yog-Sothoth I think.
Just banging, I think.
Who is like...
No, yeah.
No, no, you see his face in a portal and it flashes colors and it's like a dude's face with mop shit around it. It's...
Oh, you mean that, yeah.
That may have been his twin. That may have been Yogg-Sothoth himself. Who knows?
Who can never know?
I guess that's maybe my one complaint about the movie. The ending kind of sucks. It just kind of like out of nowhere, everything's done and then credits.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, it's entertaining, but I don't know that I hold it in as high a regard as you do.
Okay.
But I'm not like a huge AIP guy either.
That's fair.
I thought it was, I liked all the, like, the sets, and I liked that they used colors to, like, signify Yogg-Sothoth showing up. And I liked that they had a flimsy excuse to have a half naked chick on a, on an altar. I feel like that was a Cormany kind of thing.
Definitely.
And yeah, I thought, you know, for an adaptation, I thought it did a decent job.
I mean, it hit all of the important lines from the story. It hit all of the important plot points. It just, you know, it kept Wilbur alive longer. And the evil was defeated much more easily.
Yeah, you just have to shout at it, I guess.
Yeah.
As long as you know the right words, you just shout them.
But I don't know why I love this movie so much. It feels like nostalgic to me, but I know I didn't see this movie until maybe 10 years ago. So it's not like I grew up watching this flick.
Fair enough. I saw Necronomicon 2015.
Oh, yeah. We got to talk about that. The Dunwich Horror Picture Show.
Dunwich Horror Picture Show. And honestly, like, that was killer. Like, I loved that. There was like...
Now, what is that for our listeners? What is the Dunwich Horror Picture Show?
It's basically like kind of like Rocky Horror, where they have like a, you know, like people in the audience and like, you know, it's interactive. It's like that, but with the Dunwich Horror playing, and they have a live band. Or at least they did when I went, and they have like giant tentacle things they throw from the mezzanine, and they have like people in costume who kind of walk by, and I don't know, it was a lot of fun.
Now, was that your first time seeing it? Was that version?
Yeah, the whole way through, yeah. Well, I mean, we caught it a little, like, I think we were 20 minutes late, but...
Now, that may have ruined, like, just the regular movie for you.
Oh, yeah, no, it totally did. I will admit to that. Like, after you've seen, like, giant fake tentacles, like, falling from the second, from the balcony, and, like, a live band playing along, and, like, yeah, it's not the same to watch it at home.
Well, I guess if you can, watch it on its own first if you haven't seen this movie. Because, yeah, it sounds like that'll ruin a good thing for you. In a nice way. It sounds like a fucking hell of a time. And they're doing it again this year at Necronomicon.
It was super awesome. I would definitely recommend it.
So if you're going this year, Sunday night they're doing it. So
I mean, I might get shithoused and go again. but yeah, you know what? Like, I don't know. You've kind of turned me around to liking it a little bit more, because when I finished it like a couple hours ago, I was like, God damn it, that movie again. But it's, I don't know. It's like there is this kind of charm.
It's charming. To it. Despite the fact that Wilbur's a creepy roofying rapist.
I mean, yeah, it manages to be charming despite that.
Yeah. Like I said, if you like AIP flicks, you'll probably like this one. If you don't, there's really not much here for you.
I don't really like AIP picks, though, and, like, I don't know. It's kitschy, but I feel like this is a good movie to get super loaded to and just kind of, I don't know, half pay attention to.
You know, I can't say you're wrong there. I'm not one to half pay attention to movies, but I imagine this would be a fun one. They look up and there's fucking space hippies. I mean, damn.
Yeah, it's like you watch the space hippies and then, I don't know, there's some other stuff. So you're just doing whatever. And then it's like, oh, shit, like fucking villagers. I mean, like, obviously more paying attention than that, but it's got its major moments.
Now,
the thumb stuff. You got to keep an eye out for the thumb stuff.
The thumb stuff is fantastic. I love that. More occultists should do that as their symbol for evil shit.
Was that an Aleister Crowley thing he's doing or what?
Maybe. I don't know. I didn't do that level of research into it.
I want to say there's like that was his thing. He would do the thumb thing, but I could be wrong. I'm not an occultist. I don't really study this kind of stuff.
Yeah, I don't either. I think it's fun to read about, but I'm no scholar on it.
All I know about Aleister Crowley is he was one of those fun people that was just like, I believe that occultism is just like butt stuff, just a lot of butt stuff.
Hey, so there we go. All right.
And he was weird with farting. He loved farting.
That ties back into the beginning of the episode where we were talking about putting thumbs up butts.
Yeah, I wish and I remembered how that nursery rhyme went now.
Yeah, like, I don't, it's like little boy something. I don't know. But, you know, you're right. There is a famous photo of Aleister Crowley pretty much doing the same fucking thumb thing.
That's the only reason I thought of it. Because, like, I'm not a Crowley head or anything,
but
that's how they go, that's how they refer to themselves.
Oh yeah, it's a big thing. They
it's like the cheese heads, but you know.
But I don't know if that was like him just like for a photo shoot doing something, or if it's a legit like occult symbol.
I mean, he seemed like a schmuck, so he might have been like, check it out, guys.
But yeah, check this movie out. I think it's still on Netflix.
It's not on Netflix. That is one thing. It's no longer on Netflix, and on Amazon Prime, you have to pay for it, which boo. But
if you like Blu-rays, you know what?
You can just Google it. It's
don't encourage piracy, sir.
It's not. Well, okay. Buy the DVD.
Yeah, I was going to say, Scream Factory put out a wonderful Blu-ray that's a double feature with Murders in the Rue Morgue. So if you like AIP, it's right up your alley for like $12.
Don't just Google it.
Also, Little Jack Horner, since it's going to kill us if we don't look it up. Oh,
wait, really?
Yeah, Little Jack Horner sat in the corner.
In the corner,
eating a Christmas pie.
Eating a Christmas pie.
Yeah, put in his thumb, pulled out a plum, and said, what a good boy am I.
That kid needs help, yo.
Yeah.
Where are his parents?
Who knows, man? We don't even know if he's like a child. He could just be
like a full grown man.
They just call him Little Jack Horner. Like he could just be a short dude.
He could.
Anyway.
All right.
Speaking of Little Jack Horner, Sean, where can we find you on the internet?
You can find me at SpookySean.com. On Amazon. Currently, you can get Hate from the Sky, my novella from Eraserhead Press. Too Late, which is my chapbook from my own press, McMahon Beast Books. Letters of Decline, which has a story of mine. It's all job horror theme stuff. From Orphan Parish Books, and debuting at Necronomicon, I will have a story in Terror in 16 Bits, which is Muzzle Land Press's video game themed anthology. And I will also be in a promotional chapbook for Test Patterns from the newly formed Planet X Publications from Michael Adams. And my Twitter handle is at SpookySeanT, and I am on Facebook.
Right on. Well, if you have any nursery rhymes about sticking your thumb in shit for us, our email address is mailbag@miskatonicmusings.com. We're at facebook.com/miskatonicmusings, on Twitter at miskatonicpod, Instagram miskatonicmusings, miskatonicmusings.tumblr.com, and our general hub on the internet is miskatonicmusings.com. From there, you can get to our iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, and RSS feeds. If you like us, subscribe, leave a rating, leave a review. We fucking dig it.
We love it. Send those listener questions in.
Yeah, keep them coming.
We need more than Tim. I know Tim has probably at this point sent 50 in, but...
Not yet.
Just the 5.
I think that wraps it up. This is a good place to close the pony down.
Close it down. Put the thumbs on your head.
Oh, I thought you were saying the pony.
Yeah, it was an unfortunate timing because I knew as soon as I said it, like,
yeah.
It's going to sound like I want to shove my thumb up a horse's. That's not where I was going.
That's how you get kicked.
That's not advisable.
No. You ever been kicked by a horse, Sean?
No. Have you?
No. I'm saying it doesn't seem like fun.
My girlfriend's dad fell off a horse when he was younger and almost lost a finger.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, I guess he like smacked into a tree and it was like his index finger was like hanging.
Damn.
So, yeah, that was, I don't know. I didn't want to hear that story before I tried to ride a horse for the first time.
Have you ridden a horse?
I have, but it was it's really lame. We went to this horse farm where they had these horses that would literally just do the same like loop around, so like you barely needed to know how to do anything. which I figured out like halfway through, where I was like, I'm making him turn left. And then I realized I was doing it the opposite way. And he was just turning the same way he would go anyway, because he just does the same fucking route.
That's like a smart horse. He knows what's up.
Yeah. I mean, it was, I don't know, like it hurts like your insides. Like
emotionally just kinda, or just like the motion?
No, just like your thighs and stuff. You're just like, oh God, this is uncomfortable.
Okay. Well, on that note, thank y'all for listening. Until next time, this has been Miskatonic Musings. I'm Charles.
I'm Sean.
Good night, and go shove your thumbs on the sides of your head, because it's actually pretty cool looking. Trust us.
Ole, ole.
Ole.
Tying it back to the hola at the beginning.
Oh, fuck! I should have ended this in Spanish.
I was trying to think of the buenos noches.
Yeah, that could have been it, but I dropped the ball. I'm sorry.
It's all right.
Ah, well.
Anyway, if you see us at Necronomicon, we're probably drunk, so say something about thumbs.